cliffcentral.com. Burning platform fired up by Nando's on cliffcentral.com.
Good morning, Justice.
Good morning. Good morning, guys.
Yeah.
Oh, hang on a second. I need to turn you up a little bit there.
Yeah, it's one of those days.
Can you hear? Are your headphones connected?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, Justice, we're all set. Right, so thanks for being here. You did promise us you'd be here today in the flesh.
In the flesh, and I'm here in the flesh.
Yeah. Okay, so Justice, let's not waste any time.
Mm.
At this stage, when it comes to this whole Sasa debacle, I feel like we are in one of those 22 long episode series, right? And the plot of the storyline just keeps getting more and more muddled up and complicated. And I never know what's really happening because, you know, yesterday or the day before, people were talking about, well, did Batavila Dlamini's department miss that Concord deadline or didn't they? Then yesterday, CPS were talking about, we're not so sure if we're going to be able to meet the April 1st deadline. What is happening, Justice?
It's you're absolutely right. It's a bit like an onion. It keeps on, you peel yes. And then it's, oh, there's more. Oh, there's more. There's going to be a worm in there. And what a, you know, every day. I mean, today we'll get even more detail and it will be, no, this, that, and so forth and so forth. But if you look at it, everyone is now at the point where they're defending their corner. If you listen to the minister's lawyer's counsel yesterday, it was basically, it wasn't me, it was Thokozani Magwaza, the SASSA CEO, the poor guy who's been on sick leave for the past 2 weeks or whatever. you know, and the other one says, no, it wasn't me, it was her, and so forth and so forth. And CPS, Serge Bellamant of UP, of Net1, UEPS, saying, no, it wasn't us. And if you don't sign right now, there will be nothing paid. And so he's got a gun to the minister's head and to government's head. Everyone is playing for their own interests. Right now, you have a situation where SASSA says, it wasn't us, it was the minister. You have Net1 saying, well, you know, we've been here wanting to pay. So long as you give us a huge, massive profit. So it wasn't us. The minister saying, no, it wasn't me, it was Magwaza. Everyone saying it wasn't me. The at the end of the day, and this, I think, is why we should all understand why Mogoeng, the Chief Justice, is so apoplectic. And it's because guys have had since 2014 to sort out this mess. It became clear yesterday that SASSA knew that it can't deliver in March, April last year. So what have people been doing since then? Mm-hmm. And that quote, the Mogoeng quote about incompetence is exactly the truth. That what were you doing all this time? What did he say? How do we get to this level of incompetence? How? You could see the men wanted to weep at just how bad this thing was. And we got here simply because people don't respect the law. People might say one is overreaching. But if you think about it, why did President Zuma for years and years refuse to acknowledge that the constitutional, well, that the public protector's recommendation that he pay back the money instructs him to do so. And only when he went to the constitutional court did he say, oops, yes, you're right, I want to pay. And this was when he was advised by Jeremy Gauntlet, his lawyer at the time, or the lawyer who represented him at the constitutional court. But all along, he just refused to acknowledge that the law demands that he comply with the constitutional court and with the public protector's recommendations. This is, again, an example of a minister doing exactly the same thing, told by the constitutional court in 2014 and still unable to say, yes, that's the law, I'm going to do it. So, you know, I think there's a lot more that's going to come out about this contract. I think that's a lot of illegality that's hanging over it. I think a point will come when someone, and I think it will be the money that will lead us to someone who is benefiting and not benefiting for the millions, 11 million beneficiaries, 11 million paid payments, 17 million beneficiaries of these grants. I think someone is getting a nice little bit of kickback, and it will all come out in the wash. If it's not today, it will be tomorrow, but it will come out.
Justice, if this April 1st deadline is not met and people are not paid, beneficiaries don't receive their grants, what will happen?
Okay. If that doesn't happen, you've got two things. There will be people who will say, let's wait and see. Government will pay. We'll find a way. But my view is that you and I, Ben, everyone, we should hunker down and prepare for severe social unrest in South Africa. If in a household where there's a grandmother and there's three children, who receive a child grant or a foster grant of some sort, suddenly there is no money coming in. The old age grant of 1,600, the child grant of whatever, 400 rand or so. These, in many instances, this is all that keeps that family going from day to day. And so you think about the people of this week. The main reef road was shut down because I think it was the community of Westbury that was protesting. You think about last week in Rege Park. You think about on last Friday the meter taxi drivers who shut down the roads to O.R. Tambo. We have become a protest nation every day. Today you just have to find it. You'll find that there's a major road being blockaded because people are angry. What happens when so many poor, desperate people don't get their money? They will get angry. So I think there's a security situation. I think it's a very serious one. I think that to ignore it is to be naive in the extreme. And so I think we have to take that possibility very seriously. Serge Bellament at Net One says that no, our government has to sign by yesterday afternoon. From today, the countdown has started, and that means that they might not be able to pay on April 1. Mm. The Minister of Finance, and this is what you began with when you said, you know, someone says this, the next day someone says this. The Minister of Finance said he presses the his people press the button 3 days before the end of the month. On the same day, the money goes from the Reserve Bank to SASSA. SASSA presses the button. It goes into Grindrod Bank. Grindrod Bank gets it to CPS, and the payments get made. So for him, it's a three-day process. For Bellament, it's a 11-day process. So who's right and who's wrong here? Mm. From where the minister's sitting, we still have time to negotiate something in the next 4 or 5 days. To Serge Bellament, it was, you didn't sign my thing yesterday, I won't be able to pay. My view is that, quite frankly, I think CPS has been an unreliable, grotesquely overpaid player in this whole thing. Yes, they've got technology. Yes, they've invested, but it just doesn't seem right what they're getting, the huge profits that they're making. And it looks to me that they're holding a gun to the minister and to the government's head saying, and government knows this, that there will be riots, that there will be protests, that there will be serious consequences. And so it's, oh, my word, what do I do? Okay, Serge Bellament, yeah, let me sign. Now, people like Pravin Gordhan clearly and others and the interministerial committee that rejected this new contract that was agreed between Bathabile Dlamini and SASSA and Serge Bellament are basically saying, we will sign, but not with your gun to our head.
But Justice, this is where I get confused. If back in 2014 already the Constitutional Court deemed that contract between CPS and SASSA invalid, why in 2017 are we sitting here entertaining CPS who want this new contract?
You see, I mean, this for me, this is the, you're absolutely right. This is the nub of the matter. Why? It's I want to answer this question, but it's so glaringly obvious that it should not have happened. It should have stopped ages ago.
Well, I saw something interesting on Twitter yesterday from Mbuya Seni Ndlozi. He said, what Chief Justice Mokgweng is doing is seeking explanation why Butterbee did nothing about SASSA. In effect, it's Zuma's job. He should have brought her the book
exactly.
a long time ago.
Yeah, exactly.
He should have gone, hang on a second, this whole department here, this isn't going well. What's going on?
And I'm going to fire the head and get someone who can do the job, because this was clear. Now, I want to tell you, in December, when we were closing off, at December 2016, we sat here on a Thursday morning and we spoke about exactly this. We went on and we actually delved a bit into the question you've asked now. Why are we talking about this when so many times so long ago this was the thing? Now, at that time, I remember the spokesperson for SASSA came out. I think his name is Paseka something. We've got his name somewhere. He said, you guys just chill. This is in December. Mm. So that's like 3 months to go, 3.5 months to go. But they knew in April. So even then, that was a lie. That was a lie 3 months ago. They knew a year ago that we can't do this thing. They didn't do anything about it. But then to your question, the key is, why is it consistently when SASSA and its CEOs kept on saying, guys, okay, we can't do it. Let's speak to the post office. Let's speak to someone else. Let's see if the banks can't do anything. Let's find a way. Why is it the minister consistently, everyone says, she said, no, go and speak to Net1 Cash Paymaster Services. Go and speak to them. Let's see what they can do. Why did she want this contract to be signed so desperately? Mm. And that, for me, is where the next peel of the onion must be, because someone, surely, why are they so desperate to have this one company be the beneficiary?
All right. Let's leave that one for now, Justice. As you say, it will probably keep unfolding in further layers. Let's move on to an issue regarding the president for a second, where apparently he recently broke his own organization's laws for Andile Lungisa. So maybe begin by providing the context of who Andile is, what he's doing these days. I mean, wasn't he the former Youth League deputy president or something?
Yes, he was. You've got him absolutely right. Andile Lungisa was, when Julius Malema was president of the ANC Youth League, when Julius Malema was the president, Andile Lungisa was the deputy president. He was also the chairman of the National Youth Development, NYDA, National Youth Development Agency. In his time at the NYDA was totally bankrupted when he was chairman. many people will remember him from... I'm trying to find the story here, but from the story when he offered the Department of Arts and Culture the opportunity to bring out the famous, I think it's R&B, I'm not very good at this kind of music.
Okay.
The star from the U.S., who was going to come and sing and so forth and so forth.
Uh-huh.
And he was paid upfront money for this opportunity. And the artist never arrived.
yes.
And the artist never arrived. So Lungisa was arrested after he made this a big issue. The last I looked, Lungisa and his co-accused, I think there were three of them, were still going on, still on trial. I'm not sure what's the status of that case today, but so many people will remember when he was going to court on this matter, one of the co-accused came up with a very fantastic novel way of making sure that photographers don't take a picture of him. So he got a KFC brown paper bag and put it over his head and punched holes in it.
Right, you have to be able to see where you're going. Still,
so you had this extraordinary scene in as they walked into court in chains, I have to say, of Andy Lelungisa and his comrade. And this guy had this brown paper bag on his head and a suit and those long shoes, the kicker bobozas. So he had this. It was a beautiful picture, really beautiful. So that's Andy Lelungisa. So Andy Lelungisa sort of retreated back to the Eastern Cape, to Nelson Mandela Bay, Port Elizabeth, where he's become a sort of regional leader. But he sits on the provincial executive committee of the ANC. So you have Jacob Zuma and others at the national level, and then you have the provinces and the provincial leadership. And then under the provinces, you have the regions, and under the regions, you have the branches. Now, if the ANC says, if you are a national executive committee member, don't go back to Mpumalanga where you come from and try to be the chairman of the ANC in Mpumalanga. You are now a national leader. Don't go to the provinces and take over from the young guns. If you're at provincial level, don't go back to your village and try to take over from the young guns in the village. Mm. The law says you're higher, you can't stand for a lower position unless you've lost the higher position. They did it with Becky Cele when he tried to go back home to KZN. They said, no, you're in the National Executive Committee. You can't go back home to your region. They did it with Nomvula Mokonyane when she wanted to be chairman of the ANC in Gauteng. They said, no, you're a National Executive Committee member. You can't do it. So Gwede Mantashe writes to Andy Lelungisa last week and says, guy, you can't be the chairman of the Nelson Mandela Bay ANC while you're in the provincial executive of the Eastern Cape. So you got to stop. Andy Lelungisa calls him names and says, I'm doing it anyway. Last Saturday, he goes and stands, and lo and behold, he wins in the conference and becomes chairman of the ANC. Now, every ANC leader should be saying, no, 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 no. You've broken the rules of our organization that we made. Not Jacob Zuma. Jacob Zuma jumps on a plane, flies to Port Elizabeth, arrives at the conference and says, whoa, the ancestors have spoken. They've given us Andy Lelungisa, he who said R. Kelly is coming, pocketed 2 million rand. And where's R. Kelly? We are waiting for R. Kelly. Ooh, PN, where is he? No R. Kelly in the house. I mean, really. Doesn't R. Kelly sing these kind of gospelish songs where, like, we're waiting for Jesus? Or
you know what? Justice, R. Kelly's repertoire is actually very diverse. He's sung gospel songs, everything about gospel, all the way through to women's underwear. He's quite a diverse artist. But obviously, then.
Thanks for the education.
But, I mean, for the president to fly all the way to the Eastern Cape, so the relationship between the president and Andile then, should it make us a little bit suspicious, a little bit nervous?
Yes. Now, you know, there's something that we've put on the diary as well to discuss, and it's the fact that Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma arrived back in South Africa yesterday. There was a big rally at the Owa Tambo, and people saying, we've got plans for you. We've got plans for you. This is Colin Maine saying all this about her. So what is going on here? The Eastern Cape is a province where President Jacob Zuma has not had much support. In Nelson Mandela Bay, the leadership of the ANC in that region was so divided, was so incompetent that the ANC had to disband it and had to send the football guy, Denny Jordan in there to run for mayor, because they were so divided, there was so much corruption that the ANC knew that they were not going to win anyway. So the ANC there has not come out in support of President Zuma or whatever new candidate will replace him in December. there's a big battle for the Eastern Cape to endorse either Cyril Ramaphosa, Zweli Mkhize, or Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma. Andile Lungisa is a big fan of Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma.
Mm-hmm.
So his ascendance to power now in Nelson Mandela Bay, which is one of the most influential provinces, regions of the ANC in the Eastern Cape, makes the possibility that in December, as the buses arrive in Joburg for the ANC conference, that at least out of the 9 buses with delegates in them, 2 of them will be singing Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma, my president, instead of all of them singing Cyril Ramaphosa, my president. So this is part of the play for December 2017. And so what you're seeing is President Jacob Zuma going to Nelson Mandela Bay to PE on Sunday, essentially to endorse a candidate who has broken his organization's own laws, just so that that candidate can endorse his favorite candidate.
Hmm.
And so this is really something that we should all sit up and talk about, because is President Zuma prepared to break the ANC's own rules just so that Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma can have a foothold in the Eastern Cape?
Go ahead.
He has to be watching Game of Thrones. Where is he getting all these ideas from? Because this is like, you can't make this up.
But then what about the rest of the executive, Justice? When the president of the ANC breaks the organization's laws, isn't something supposed to happen?
Something is definitely supposed to happen. First of all, Jacob Zuma should have been standing there, because let me put it this way. On Friday, there's a letter. It's been published by the Herald in PE. Excuse me. That letter was published by the Herald. It's a letter from Gwede Mantashe to Andile Lungisa. It's very clear. It says these are the rules. These are the examples. Now, this matter is not between me and you. It's between the organization, its rules, and you. You all you have to do is say, it's true, I'm in the provincial executive, therefore I cannot stand. And the rule is very clear. It says you can't resign from the higher structure just so that you can go and get into the lower structure.
Mm.
That's not allowed. You agree to be in the higher structure, you're in there, keep going. It was signed on the 10th of March, that's Friday. Conference starts at the weekend, and then he gets elected on Sunday. So Jacob Zuma knew that this letter was there, but Jacob Zuma was like, I don't care about the rules. So what other rules of the ANC are going to be defied? And the key, the main representative spokesman of the ANC is the president of the ANC.
Yeah.
And he doesn't care about them. What about, let's say, we've got nice rules. I know that Ben's going to be president one day.
Yeah.
He's going to get one term, and then he's going to get a second term.
Mm.
Now, the rules in our constitution say no one can have 3 terms. Mm. You get 2 terms and you're out. It's not even like the Americans. The Americans haven't written the rule down. It's just tradition. If it's their tradition to do it. They don't break the tradition, although it's not written down. We don't break the law because we've written it down in our constitution.
Mm.
Manje, if President Jacob Zuma breaks his own organization's rules, what about our constitution, which he has flouted once, according to the Constitutional Court?
Yeah.
Is he capable of doing this? In any other context, one wouldn't ask this question. But when a man starts to break his own organization's rules and regulations, what are we supposed to do? And when he is asked, why are you breaking this? He says, the ancestors. The ancestors. The ancestors. He said, a quote, the ancestors have given us Andile Lungisa, and therefore we just have to work with what we've been given. Okay. The ancestors.
Okay, so he's watching Game of Thrones and 300. That's how that movie started.
Well, I mean, when you've got the ancestors behind you, how can you possibly lose?
I mean, really. So the ANC is 105 years old. It's got rules and regulations written since 1912. And now we cutting up with throwing the rule book out because, well, the ancestors have given us Andy Lelungisa. You know, I wish the ancestors had given us R. Kelly. Just arrived.
Yeah. We just were not as lucky, Justice. Okay. Then there is the matter of radical economic transformation, which the ANC have also been making utterances about. Mm. So what have they been saying? What have they not been saying?
Now, I'm fascinated by the debate on radical economic transformation. You remember President Zuma on the 9th of February at the State of the Nation speech, he said that today we start a new phase of radical economic transformation. Now, if you follow these things, in May 2014, after the ANC went from 65.9% to 62%, President Zuma said, today we start a new phase of radical socioeconomic transformation. I don't know about you, but I haven't seen any radical socioeconomic transformation since 2014. In 2011, when Julius Malema was saying, nationalize the mines, President Jacob Zuma said, we are starting a new phase of socioeconomic transformation. I haven't seen any since 2011 when he said that. So, firstly, this socioeconomic transformation seems to be, and I want to quote the SA Communist Party, which says that this radical socioeconomic transformation seems to be cover for radical economic looting. They point out that the people who keep on talking about radical socioeconomic transformation are the ones who seem to want to have access to state resources and use them for personal, not for the country's benefit and for the benefit of the poor and so forth and so forth. But then the ANC releases its policy documents on Sunday. Those policy documents are absolutely important. There's about, I think, 200 pages. You can go home and read that. It's very, very, very exciting stuff. You know, I like to go to bed and just, you know, with my wife, tell her that this is what I'm reading and so forth. It's very exciting in my household. So you can read those documents and you will struggle to find radical socioeconomic transformation or what it means. So if the ANC's documents don't clarify or don't get into detail about what is radical socioeconomic transformation and what it entails from now on, I wonder if this is a policy of Jacob Zuma and a certain faction of the ANC or whether this is ANC policy. Because if this is ANC policy, it should be clear in this in these documents. Another related topic in those documents is the idea of expropriation of land without compensation, which has been current, which President Jacob Zuma himself said in February, I think the 21st, that we need to review the constitution and introduce expropriation without compensation. Julius Malema said, wow, Jacob Zuma, you finally found yourself. We're going to give you a chance to do what you're talking about. We're going to take this matter to parliament and give you a chance to vote for expropriation without compensation by amending Section 25 of the Constitution. When the matter went to the to Parliament, lo and behold, the entire ANC, the entire DA and everyone else said no way and defeated the motion. So Jacob Zuma seems to have his own policies because he says expropriate without compensation. In fact, he went and spoke to the Congress of Traditional Leaders just before that vote earlier this month in March, and he said black parties must unite to change the constitution to ensure that expropriation without compensation happens. Lo and behold, his own ANC doesn't unite with the EFF or anyone else and says, no way, this is not our policy, and chucks it out. So when you read the policy documents now and you say, where is that expropriation without compensation? Dololo in those documents.
Nowhere to be found.
Nowhere to be found. Okay. So one of the things that I'm wondering about, and I think for this year that we all need to look out for, is the ANC talking left and talking radical. Maybe because the EFF has become such an important player in our politics, whereas on paper, in its documents, it's still the same old ANC. Mm. Because there is nothing about expropriation in the documents. In fact, when people like Jacob Zuma, Ayanda Dlodlo, Sihle Zikalala are calling for expropriation without compensation, yesterday, Zweli Mkhize, the Treasurer General, says, why do you need to change the Constitution? There's no need. You can achieve everything you want without changing the Constitution. Naledi Pandor on Sunday saying, people have been drinking a little bit too strong a juice here because they think you change Section 25, then you've solved the land question. No, there's nothing wrong with that. Ino Godongwana and I said the same thing. Jackson Mtembu. So it seems like that, those, shall I say, intellectual crowd in the ANC doesn't see any problem with the Constitution. Jacob Zuma doesn't seem to have support much for expropriation without compensation. So I think we're going to see a lot of noise and noise and noise about land and so forth. But will the ANC really change in December? Increasingly, I'm starting to think, no, actually, you're not going to see any changes to Section 25 of the Constitution.
Well, as you said when you started the bit of this topic, if you haven't seen any change since 2011, why would we suddenly see change now?
And, you know, I find it interesting. President Zuma's tenure in the ANC, his tenure in the ANC comes to an end in December. Unless, of course, D.D. Mabuza or as he has done before, Supra Mahuma Pelo from the Northwest says, Jacob Zuma, he's so lovely. Mm. He's such a leader. He's so beautiful. Let's give him another term. Mm. And by the way, the ANC doesn't have term limits, so he can have a third term.
And even if they did, he could always amend that. Find a way.
Well, the ancestors could speak to him. No, Ben, that's very unfair. That's way below the belt. But I'll take it.
Okay.
So, all I'm saying is, in December, Jacob Zuma becomes a lame duck. He is no longer influential. He's no longer the president of the African National Congress. Mm. He becomes president of South Africa, but everyone else will be looking at the winner of that contest in December. They'll be looking at Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma and saying, Mama Nkosazana, what do you want us to do?
Yes.
When Jacob speaks, they say, no, wait, it's for the NEC of the ANC to speak. Okay?
Yes. Yeah.
So from December 20, when conference ends, Jacob Zuma is like Thabo Mbeki in 2007-2008. And any minute, someone, some young buck in the NEC could say, but Bafowethu, are we going to contest the 2019 election with Ubaba in office and his scandals all over us? We've got to be able to go and tell people that, no, that period is over. We're starting anew. And so my view is that from December 20, you know, I think that President Zuma will need to get himself, those bulletproof vests that are particularly at the back reinforced so that when the stabbing in the back starts proper, he should be well insulated. Otherwise, it's going to be, I think he won't finish his term because I don't know how the ANC goes to fight the 2019 election with the stench of the Zuma administration still there.
That's a good description.
Because when you look at that cabinet, you will look at it and say, there's Bathabile Dlamini. And she nearly brought us to the brink with the social grants. There is David Mahlobo, who's friends with the Rhino Horn Poachers. There is, you know, and it's just more and more and more of the same. I mean, that cabinet, you look at it, there's Museveni Zizwane on a plane with the Guptas to Switzerland to negotiate the mine. There's Des van Rooyen, weekend special. And does the ANC want that?
We don't know. We will find out in December. And then lastly, Justice, Petro SA have been making headlines of late.
Yes, I just Petro SA, people will remember, made massive losses over the past 2 years. The loss now stands at, I see I've put it at 1.5 billion, but I think it's more. I think it's 15 billion. but I wanted to just say that there is so much money in our parastatals that is being lost.
It's 15 billion.
No wonder we can't have the Commonwealth Games when money's being lost in these things.
Exactly. Now, 15 billion lost by Petro SA alone. 2 days ago, I think Transnet announced that it had, I think it was called irregular expenditure, something more than 30 billion. So think about, if it's 15 billion at Petro SA and it's 30 at Transnet and it's a little bit here, let's take Prasa. There's more than 100 billion that's being investigated. Where is that money? So you start putting it together and you think, why does a guy like Justice Malala go on Cliff Central and say there's no money for student fees? Because quite frankly, if you just look at look, we've mentioned only three: Prasa, Transnet, and Petro SA. Think about the municipal governments. Think about all the other SOEs we haven't mentioned: SAA and so forth.
Fast food budgets.
I'm not talking about the Northern Cape now. You know, Mabala comes from the Free State. It's very close to the Northern Cape. Well, of course, the Premier spent 59,000 rand in her first month on fast food. Anyway, what I'm saying is it adds up. And so sometimes we say we've got a financial problem, we can't pay the fees, the universities can't get money and so forth. But the money is there. 15 billion at Petro SA. And so for me, what was interesting about Petro SA going to parliament is that they arrived in front of the energy committee and said, we don't know, there's no one to blame. But we know that 15 billion is lost. And the guy, the chair of the committee says, But who's to blame? No one is to blame.
It was just one of those magical things that happened.
What happened when that went out of the bank account? It's just incredible. So at Transnet, I heard the CEO saying, we take these matters very seriously and we follow up. Well, who is to blame? Where are these people? I don't see people in orange overalls going, you know, this is so. 15 billion at PASA, where there's all these shenanigans with the board and the CEO and so forth. The CEO, by the way, who gave himself a 350% salary increase. All these, and you say, is there money in South Africa to really turn around the lives of poor kids who don't have access to education? Yes, by all means, clearly the money is there. But no one is to blame. No one goes to jail for. At PRASA, where is the guy, okay, who said a train, that train, who bought that train that couldn't, that was higher, that was taller than the, I mean, this guy supposedly had a PhD, he should be in jail for fraud, but no, he's it's okay.
It's okay, and there was no accountability.
Yeah, so I think that's a fundamental problem. That's why I raised that issue. I think we need to again try to stay fully awake to these things. Sometimes we say we don't have money, but the money is there. When 15 billion is lost and we say no one is to blame, surely someone is to blame. Mm. Surely someone made the wrong call. At least give me an explanation. Even if you're saying it was they bought oil when the oil price was high, and then suddenly you're sitting with a glut of oil when the prices had plunged. At least then I know what you're saying. But when you say, we don't know, but we've lost the 15, but we don't know. It's ridiculous.
I once lost 20 rand and I didn't know. But I was okay with that because, you know, different pence here and there, 20 rand. But
15 billion. I don't know. No one is to blame. I mean, where's the accountability? And I think part of it is because there's no accountability at the very top. And so at the bottom end, it's let's go out and play. There's no accountability. There's no consequence for all these things because you can lose 15 billion and nothing's going to happen. It's okay.
Well, I think to finish off, messages from Carmen here. She's just as angry as we all are. Like, how do we allow this? This will never happen in private sectors. How do these things happen? And Justice, we ask this all the time. And unfortunately, you don't have answers. None of us have answers.
I think we should have collective outrage. I think Carmen needs, for me, yesterday was a beautiful day when I saw the Chief Justice Mokgoeng ask those questions and ask them in such a tough manner.
It's cutting.
How did this happen? This is complete incompetence and so forth. So for me, one of the best things is that you have people, not just at the Constitutional Court, but across the system. And sometimes their voices are muted. Sometimes their voices are not heard enough. But they're making the case, and that's what makes this a great country. People like Bathabile Dlamini and her trying to obfuscate and not take responsibility, there will be consequences. I think that the Constitutional Court, I don't know how it will rule, but I think it will find a way to show us that what has happened and what has happened with the minister in particular has been a dereliction of duty. So the president might not act, but the Constitutional Court will act and there will be consequences.
Justice, do we need to start franchising the Constitutional Court? Because it seems only things happen when it goes there. I think we need more than one. We need, like, all the major centers should get one now.
Now, what we need is to continue to hold that institution up and say, we need more institutions like this. There was a time 6 months ago, no, last year at this time, you and I would have said the Constitutional Court and the Public Protector's Office. The Public Protector's Office now has huge question marks over it.
Yep.
And I think that's where we need to still be saying the Constitutional Court, the Public Protector's Office, then go on and say the hawks. Because 8 years ago, the scorpions were like, wow, the scorpions are amazing. And they were shut down, and the hawks are now run by Benning and Tlemesa. And the less said about him, the better. So we need to push back and make sure that we have more institutions like these that we hold up and say they're amazing. Because if the scorpions are gone and we have Benning and Tlemesa and the hawks, if the Public Protector's Office is gone, then we need to do something quickly to make sure that one day we don't talk about the Constitutional Court the way we talk about the hawks and the scorpions. And sure, that's the key thing.
Well, that's a pretty chilling way to end it. Justice, thanks always.
I thought I was ending on a light note here.
It was, sort of.
Thanks, guys.
Cool. Gareth, we'll be back next week. He gets back.
Do we want him back, guys?
Well, I mean, I'm easy, you know. I'm indifferent whether he comes back or not. Life will carry on.
Yeah, we're quite chilled. We've worked it out. As long as Lucas can give us thumbs up, and as long as I can work out how to put the volume up on my laptop, we are sorted.
I think it's all good.
I'm pretty sure that's how you do radio shows.
Yeah.
That is Justice Balala, and that was The Burning Platform.
burning platform, fired up by Nando's on cliffcentral.com. Cliffcentral.com.